Welcome to Booked, where two guys tell you about the books they're reading. I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Livia Snedden. Lots of special episodes lately and upcoming. This one is our second and final Patreon contributor review for the year. We're reviewing American Psycho, which is not something I ever thought I would say on this podcast. The book came out 17 years ago, but it was picked by Misty Bennett, a close friend of the podcast and one of our top Patreon contributors. She'll be joining us for this review. But first, here's a little bit about the author. Bret Easton Ellis is the author of 5 novels and a collection of short stories. His work has been translated into 27 languages. He lives in Los Angeles. Rob, do you think you can say hard body in 27 different languages?
I can say it in one.
All right. I didn't mean you, but do you think there's actually a word for it in 27 languages?
Oh, so you were putting a lot of faith in me. I'm wondering how. I never thought about it, but I have no idea. I'm guessing so.
I'm pretty sure this book doesn't read the same if you take out, a third of the text by removing that word from the... No? Nothing?
And it's funny that you say that, because I noticed that word so prevalent in the book, but those were not, and we'll get to later, the things that I kept noticing recurring were entirely different than the word hard body.
All right. You want to give everybody a synopsis for this?
In American Psycho, Bret Easton Ellis imaginatively explores in the incomprehensible depths of madness and captures the insanity of violence in our time or any other. That's a really weird sentence. Patrick Bateman moves among the young and trendy in 1980s Manhattan. Young, handsome, and well-educated, Bateman earns his fortune on Wall Street by day while spending his nights in ways we cannot begin to fathom. Expressing his true self through torture and murder, Bateman prefigures an apocalyptic horror that no society could bear to confront. Really, I really hung up on that prefigures word there.
I'm okay with that as a synopsis.
That's good. That author bio was just rock star.
I know, right? So that's the knowing that you've got it done is when your author bio and your synopses kind of hit their marks like they're supposed to. We take a minute and reintroduce again Misty Bennett. Thanks again, Misty, for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
For anybody who may not have noticed, Misty is our newest co-host for all of our holiday episodes, replacing Amanda Gowan. So thank you for that too, Misty.
Oh, no. Thank you. It's a privilege.
Little window into Misty's mind that the first book she introduces us to is American Psycho, if you ask me.
Yeah,
I thought about that, how that was going to go over.
So that's really where I wanted to start. I know that we have to review this book, but I, as a guest on the show, I want to start with one question. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I know, and I actually have read this 4 times. I used to read it every summer. It seemed like good poolside reading for me. I'm not really sure. So maybe it was about getting tan. Like it was the tanning. But no, I think I read this not very long after I read all of Chuck Palahniuk, and it was natural to kind of gravitate towards Bret Easton Ellis. And I read, I think Less Than Zero was definitely the first one, and Rules of Attraction, but American Psycho I avoided because I already had seen the movie and I didn't think the book would really have something different. But to me, it's completely different. Obviously not the what kind of character he is and the satire, but it's so much more detailed, but also like some of the stuff that it says about him, how complicated he is as a character. To me, he's not just a serial killer. It's a lot more complicated than that. So that's why I love the book.
It's going to be an interesting discussion to have there, because I have not really well-formed thoughts, but I have some thoughts in that. Yeah, I mean, they're just...
The poorly formed thoughts.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, I think that a lot of people, if you've read this, probably understand that it's not very straightforward in any way, shape, or form, that the main character is almost complex in his simplicity, maybe? I don't know. Maybe we'll discuss that a little more later on. Rob, so what has been your exposure to American Psycho prior to this reading it?
I'd seen the movie. Probably, I don't want to say like when it came out, but more recently, in the last several years, I'd seen the movie and I liked it. but I didn't think too much about it. And so I was always open to the idea of, honestly, like, this book falls into the category, had until now fallen into the category of, I would absolutely read it if I wasn't doing a podcast that made me read books.
So terrible, isn't it? People can't understand how that works.
So, yeah, so many amazing books are kind of sidelined because of the format that we've created. So, had I not been doing the podcast, probably would have read this years ago, especially like, well, that's kind of like a catch 22, because had I not been doing the podcast, I might not have met the people who would have told me to read this book. So who fucking knows? But yeah, I had always been open to the idea of reading the book, but never had a chance to. I also rewatched the movie, actually bought and rewatched the movie for this episode as well.
Oh. Well, interesting. Maybe you guys will be able to share some thoughts. I have not seen the movie, but I am going to. After my reading this book, I would like to see the movie. Many years ago, I read about half of this book. And I'm saying about because I'm not really sure. Like, I know I made it past the chapter on Genesis, because when people would ask me about this, I'd be like, that's that book that has a whole chapter on the band Genesis in it. So I know that I'd gotten past that, but I don't think I quite made it to 50%. I had read less than zero, and I remember just vaguely thinking, you know, like it was okay. It was a good book. I don't remember having any problems with it, but nothing about it really sticks out to me. So that's kind of my exposure to Bret Easton Ellis. So I kind of knew a little bit about what I was getting myself into based on the little bit that I'd read. But all I can say is that this book, some point after 30 or 40%, goes way more depraved than I even thought it was going to based on what I remember reading. Does that make sense? So there was still some shock value, even though I'd read that much. It gets so much more fucked up after wherever I dropped it last time. That's my first question to you is, what the fuck is wrong with you? This is, I'm going to go ahead and say it because, you know, I know we were talking a little bit beforehand. Everyone thinks I'm super jaded and stuff. This is the most disturbing book I've ever read. And I say that knowing full well that I've read some pretty dark and disturbing shit. And this one is definitely the top right now.
That's fair.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, I mean, it's a pretty mainstream book, and it's definitely got some sort of place in at least contemporary like literature and stuff like that. But I'm reading some of these, like, you know, descriptions of the horrific scenes of murder and stuff, and it's just like, it almost made me stop and think, like, where did Ellis come up with this? Like, how did his mind allow him to get to the point where he could write that? Like, you know, we're desensitized to violence a lot. But yeah, it was just like more. It was just like, you know how sometimes like you get so of something that like it doesn't even like you don't have that reaction anymore. You're just kind of like surprised. And I was kind of like that. Like, I was so like disturbed by what I was reading that I was just like, it was almost like, good job, dude. Like, you went that far.
It's funny that you say that, because what I was thinking about when I was reading this, along the lines of what you were just saying, I thought to myself, he's just going to write the most disturbing shit that he can think of. So he's sitting down and really coming up with some really fucked up things. The thing that this reminds me of, although I'm not, my thoughts on the two aren't the same. Have either of you seen a Serbian film?
No, but I'm aware of it.
So the most probably disgusting and one of the most disturbing movies I've ever seen. But you can just tell that the guy who wrote that was like, oh, I have these super disgusting and you know, weird and violent scenes that I want to film. How do I put a story around it? With this one, I don't think that he started with the scenes. I think he wanted to start with a depraved character and came up with the scenes later. So I think it was his intention to do those things. But I don't feel that he had a scene with a girl that he's dating and a hooker, you know, where all these horrific things go on. I think that kind of developed out of telling the story about someone who's depraved is the other way around. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes. And I realized that, some of the stuff I'm going to say is cheating a little bit, because I have, since I read it so long ago, I've read a lot of interviews with him and what he says about it. And I realize he can change. Just because he says this is how I came up with the idea doesn't mean it's true. However, Livius, you're spot on with what he says in interviews, is that Pat Bateman was a character that he was definitely fucked up, but he was not originally even a serial killer. That was something that came later. after he started kind of bridging out the story and everything. So it was not intentional that it would be a shock, violent type of book to begin with.
The thing that I think of, and I was thinking about when I was reading the book, is like, and I don't know if you guys got into this, and I'll be interested to hear your reaction to what I'm about to say, but like, as you go through and there's more, well, first of all, this dude kills women, for anybody who hasn't. Like, he basically just, he doesn't kill exclusively women, but you can tell that that's what he likes to do, is kill women. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about the psychology of, like, did he, didn't he, and all that stuff, I'm sure, eventually. But, or maybe in spoiler talk, who knows? I guess what I want to get at is, like, as you're reading the description of a kill, and then another one, and another one, another one, themes start to emerge. Like, this dude did not like eyes. Like, he does a lot of damage to people's eyes. And then it starts to, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, how psychologically accurate is this depiction of this guy who kills people? Because, like, people who stab eyes might, you know, have some sort of, like, you know, feeling of, like, not wanting to be looked at or something like that. And, like, if this is a consistent thing throughout all of his kills, maybe that's a thing. But we also know he's a big narcissist and wants to look perfect and everything. So mm-hmm. I really dove down a rabbit hole of, like, dude, how much, like, effort did Ellis put into the way the people that were killed actually got killed? Was it intentional to build the character, or was it just like, I want this to be gory?
That's really interesting.
That is a good question.
Sure. I'm not sure on that. I think that maybe spoiler talk, and maybe in there we'll be able to explore some passages that I've highlighted for some light reading during lunchtime. I think we should probably take a step back because we are reviewing this book. So although there's not much of a synopsis, I'll kind of start. We just start with Patrick Bateman in the middle of a normal day. He's walking somewhere with a friend slash coworker of his. And really, this is the 80s. It's all Wall Street and cocaine. The book does a great job depicting how everybody looks the same, which is actually one of my favorite parts of this book. And that's it. It's not even a progressive story, right? It's just vignettes of his life with very little continuity. Although some characters cross over from chapter to chapter, like that he has some ongoing developing interaction with them. There's only like two or three I can think of really that where the relationships progress at all. It's really just snapshots into his life, and it's what he's watching on TV, what music he's listening to, what he and everybody else is wearing, and then some violent interactions with people. And I think that pretty much sums up the whole of this book. Is that, would you guys agree with that?
Reservations, buddy.
Yeah, I forgot. Restaurants too. Yeah, where somebody's going to eat. So this is, and again, this may not make sense. I'll try to best explain this for people who have not read this book. Is that the book is super, super repetitive. So every character you're introduced to, assuming they're not homeless or a grocery store clerk or something, you get a full description of what they're wearing, and it's all designer stuff. So a typical passage might read, I ran into Rob, and he was wearing an Armani jacket with some Jeffrey Bain slacks and some shoes by Adolfo something or another, and cufflinks by, you know, some famous jeweler. So there's so much repetition in that for me, it started off okay, then it became annoying, then it became endearing. So there are these cycles of, as Rob mentioned, reservations, same thing. At first I was like, okay, well, you know, they're trying to say that, you know, all he says, nice restaurants, you have to have reservations. That got to be annoying, but then there's a conversation, a rather lengthy conversation towards the end that he has with two of his friends where they're trying to figure out where to eat. That may have been my favorite part of the whole book.
Yep. Yeah, I fully agree. Uh-huh. But and you're right. Like, so the book doesn't necessarily have a three act structure, you know, or a traditional like narrative. It's exactly that. But like there are subtle. I could be wrong, but I was looking for, what I was looking for was a descent into like more and more madness. Mm-hmm. as the story went along, to mirror more or less what happened in the movie. But I didn't really notice it that much. It seemed like it was more like peaks and valleys. Like in the beginning, it was a much more controlled persona And as time went on, you got to see more and more of like the slippage into total like insanity and all the stuff that goes along with that. But I feel like while there was, it wasn't necessarily like going from 0 to 60. It was like what percentage is in control versus what percentage is just like total madness. And there was always a percentage of control. It was just more present at the beginning. If this is, that makes sense, or do you guys kind of agree or disagree with what I said?
I do agree with that. And also, so the vignettes thing, I think that's spot on too, Livius. And the thing is, that's all his life consists of. There's a reason all of that stuff seems so shallow and meaningless. His life is meaningless. It's all very superficial. Everything he does every single day, it's the same thing, the same people having the same conversations, being obsessed with the minutiae of tanning and what to wear and where to go. So what that inevitably does to a person, or I mean, obviously not turn them into a serial killer, but just kind of that, what is that actually, or what can that create in a human being in its worst case scenario? In a very exaggerated worst case scenario. So
that's a little bit of what I was trying to get at earlier, is that we think he's super complicated because he's into torturing people and even animals and stuff. But he has no, from what I can see, there's not a lot of personality there. So it's almost like he's complicated, but in the most super simple way. He does these things day to day. And then the only things that really excite him legitimately are like rape, torture, murder. So
yeah,
agreed. Which is where you have to decide what is the reason for the violence, and is that the only thing that makes him feel?
Or you can just enjoy the violence. That's the other option.
Yeah, you can. To me, it's like I'm trying to think of the best way to state this. So, you have a character who is, you know, interchangeable with any of the other characters that we see, and so there's a certain status to being within the group that they're in, and that's why they want to be there. But at the same time, I think they all kind of know, like, we're almost like a prisoner to our status. And so for him, the acting out, like the saying things in conversation that are completely insane or weird or just kind of off the cuff, is him trying to differentiate himself in some way to like be an individual in a group of just like in a mass of just like sameness, is kind of how I took it.
That's interesting. I think I more took it as he's trying to create some kind of connection with people to kind of jar them out of being in that, because, and I may be pulling this also from having read Less Than Zero first, like they're all so numbed. Like they're shells of people. And so it's almost like him trying to like give them a little shake verbally by saying that stuff to them. And none of them, they just think it's funny if they hear it at all.
Yeah. I was hoping that this part would make it into the actual story. And it somewhat did, where people are constantly mistaking each other for other people because they all look the same. So all the men have like the slick back hair and like wear suspenders and expensive suits, so everyone looks alike. And I was really hoping that at some point it would play into the actual story that, you know, somebody mistakes Bateman for somebody else. And they did, which was a great payoff. Although, you know, you had to read 70 descriptions of people or situations where somebody is looking at him, but calling him by a different name, or him seeing someone and saying that someone, and then someone telling him that he's wrong, that it's somebody else. So I don't know what the 80s Wall Street scene was like, but I don't know. Maybe this is spot on.
Yeah, I can only imagine it. Yeah, I'm going to say that this is like, I'm going to take the Livius approach and just consider this to be like historical fiction.
Listen, for some of us, so this book takes place in like 1988, 89, right? Because it's coming towards the end of the 90s. Or I'm sorry, of the 80s.
Yes.
So the thing that was interesting to me is how many things I identified as things I really wanted at that time. So
to hang out with Donald Trump.
So when I was
I knew it.
when this book ends, at the climax of this book, I would have been 18, 17 or 18. So like from page one, we start where he's talking about getting a new Blaupunkt stereo. And I was like, oh man, that's all I ever wanted was when I had a car, I wanted a Blaupunkt stereo, but they were so fucking expensive. They actually went online to find and see if I should just buy one now. And apparently Blaupunkt is pretty much out of the radio making business, at least according to two websites I went to that only had some really low end stereo system. But it was just like through the course of the book, the things I read, I was like, oh, that's something I was into, or oh shit, that's something that I wanted when I was a teenager and I thought as an adult would come to me. Now my tastes may have changed a little bit since then, but it did take me a little bit back to my youth from some of the things that were mentioned.
Historical fiction. This is a weird book to talk about because like we can't really, you know, like Olivius was saying, analyze or talk about the growth or the trajectory that the story is taking us. It's just like, bam, this is what it is. So like, I don't know, what else is there to say? You want to kind of start analyzing different aspects of the book, or
I would just like to say that after reading a full chapter on the band Genesis and reading a full chapter on Whitney Houston, I finally felt like he redeemed himself a little bit with a full chapter on Huey Lewis in the news.
Yeah.
I stand by his thoughts on Huey Lewis. Not so much the other two.
Wow.
That is funny. No, honestly, I think that's all you can do, especially since even if someone hasn't read American Psycho, I think it's so much part of the culture that people know exactly what it's about, or at least like he's a Wall Street guy who's a violent serial killer and a misogynist, if you want to read it that way. So
all of that's our...
yeah, I know that. We'll go more into that.
The only female host questioning whether the obvious misogynist...
No, but is he really? Because it misogynist. Seems to me the women Here's are the exact same position thing. In this book.
Well, here's my thing. I understand that he is killing and torturing women for the most part. However, I mean, for that time period, and like if you want to consider he is a serial killer, they typically have a type that they're going to kill. I don't think it was, I hate women, I'm going to kill and torture women. That's just the type of victim. That's his victimology. If you want to read it as misogyny, you're missing the point of the book, which is about society.
I don't think we need to get into a huge argument about this, but like just saying, well, that's his victimology. The victimology grows out of something psychological. And if he's primarily choosing women as his targets, there's got to be a reason that it's women.
He just wants to connect with them. He wants to know what's inside them.
Literally.
Look, I'm sorry that I'm criticizing your boyfriend, Pat Bateman.
I just want to take this moment to read one of my favorite quotes from this
book. Here we go.
Yeah, I knew it.
That's the whole thing. I almost shot past this one till I stopped for a second. It tickled my brain a little bit. I went back and reread it. So there's real brilliance in this. Then I watched a movie about 5 lesbians and 10 vibrators.
Yeah, I did the math on that one.
That's, you know, so there is, when you were talking about his descent into madness, and although I think some of those scenes were probably a little overwritten and probably a little too descriptive and certainly disgusting, you know, at the very minimum, he was a far more entertaining character as he was crazier. So there's a part in the book where he talks about the park bench that followed him for 6 blocks. That's some really great shit right there. You know, rewind back to chapter 2 when he hasn't mentioned committing violence or doing anything, and he's just talking about people's suits and what he watched on the Patty Winter show. Although some of that was okay and entertaining, it was nowhere near as entertaining as when he was full-blown psycho.
Yeah. And the other thing about the description of the violence, which is definitely gratuitous and over the top and exaggerated, but that's how all the wardrobes are described and the restaurants, and like, think about how they describe what they eat, like what they're ordering, and or this type of cuisine and how it's different from this type of cuisine. Like, all of it is very overly detailed. So it's almost, it's keeping with that theme to me.
Good
it's
stuff.
Gross. It's gross. Like, it's hard to read. The rat one is very hard to read. and I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't like when people dismiss the whole thing as a, and hate the book for the violence of it, because I think there's so much else that it has to say. That's why I don't want it to just be about misogyny. I think there's a lot more value to what's in there than dismissing it for those passages. Cause also there's only like four or five of those passages in that 400 page book.
I mean, I wouldn't say that misogyny is the theme of the book, but it is a theme of the book. But I mean, it could be just because it was the 80s and everybody was misogynistic. Like, that was the,
and I think the zeitgeist. I mean, that's the kind, that's where he is. You can't ask him to be something other than the type of person in that setting, in that time period.
For scenes that are actually described, I think it's well balanced between men and women, actually, because he kills the bum. Right. I don't want to get dull thing, but there's another just obscene scene at an aquarium that I'm not going to talk about. There's the one coworker who everyone thinks is in London or what, you know what I mean? So I think for the scenes they're actually described, there's a balance between men and women that are killed, but he does in passing does seem to mention more women, but you know, kind of in a one-off shock value sentence in the middle of something. Like, this morning I went to the gym and then I got a facial. Then I murdered this fucking bitch, you know, in an alley, and then I went to work. And, but I mean, but that's how it reads, right? So I think it was more just shock value in the middle of a sentence versus the whole, here's a chapter where I'm going to just discuss the most depraved, violent, sexual things that I can do to somebody.
Yeah. I mean, and if we're talking themes, I think the overall theme is just like Misty was saying, now that I want to say it, I don't know exactly what I want to say, but the theme is just the Wall Street life of the 80s and how fucked up it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And maybe they're all monsters in their own way.
Well, that was supposed to be one of the things, is like toward the beginning, he was definitely not the most like offensive person in his group of people.
No, as a matter of fact, at the very beginning, they constantly refer to him as the boy next door.
Boy next door, yeah.
Yeah. It's, and I don't know, you could probably look it up on Kindle how many times they say that.
I'm going to guess it's about 5 or 6.
I would like to take this moment to read another passage from this book.
I do too.
And this is kind of what I meant. So this scene just takes place in a bar, and I don't know what the saying is. He's out with a woman, and he's probably trying to buy cocaine, because a lot of this book is exactly that. Before I leave, the Eurotrash girl tells me she likes my gazelle skin wallet. I tell her I would like to tit fuck her and then maybe cut her arms off. But the music, George Michael singing Faith, is too loud and she can't hear me. That's all I'm saying. They're just some wonderful drop-ins. Yep. To the, you know, in a regular normal setting where he's going about doing things that, you know, people do, he'll drop something in there like that. That just was super entertaining for me.
How many times did I say that boy next door appeared in the book?
5 or 6.
5 or 6.
Yep, it was 6.
Yes, you are amazing.
Yeah. I have some other statistics that we can talk about as well.
Do it.
Things that happened in the book in a recurring sense. Do you want to talk about that now, or should we go into that later?
We could do it now. I know it's hard to look this up, but to me, reading this book, the 80s Manhattan leads me to believe that there are nothing but blondes with big tits.
Yeah.
All of them.
There's hard bodies everywhere, running rampant in the city.
Would you like to know how many hard bodies are mentioned in this book?
Yes, I love it. Do it.
Hard body comes up 48 times.
Nice.
The word reservations, 76 times, although I'm guessing that a good chunk of them are all in that one chapter, which is probably my favorite chapter of the entire book. And then returning some videotapes. Any guess on how often that is mentioned?
12.
Ooh, you're so close.
All of 13. Them hilariously.
13. It add. Is funny.
Yeah.
Like, but it's midnight.
And it's just him not having anything else to fill, like not wanting to say what he really wants. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Rob, can I ask, did the hard body search include the word hard bodies in plural?
Ooh. I don't know what I searched for. I just typed. It was just the word hard body.
Okay. Because I know sometimes it's mentioned in the plural, and I don't know if that's picking up that as well.
Well, here we go. Uh-oh. 10. So that would be 58 total mentions of a hard body or hard bodies.
Love it. It's such a terrible word, and I don't remember anybody using that word like in conversation in my youth. But the fact that he's consistent is important, I guess.
So one of the other things that came up regularly, and it was probably one of my favorite things in the book, was the topics of the episodes of the Patty Winters show.
Mm-hmm. I love that too.
Do you guys remember any of them?
The one where she talks to a Cheerio for an hour is my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Or interviews a Cheerio. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, there's teenage girls that trade sex for crack. There's
Being raped by women, I believe, is one of them.
Men being raped by women is one of them.
One of us went through and wrote down every topic.
Holy shit.
You are amazing. I admire everything about you.
So would you like me to read them?
Yes.
Yes, please.
In the order they appear in the book. And actually, this actually will bring up an interesting topic. Here we go. Every topic of the Patty Winters show from the beginning to the end. A machine that lets people talk to the dead. Women with multiple personalities. Autism. Big breasts, a repeat of an interview with the president, real life Rambos, perfumes, lipsticks, and makeups, descendants of members of the Donner Party, UFOs that kill, the possibility of a nuclear war, toddler murderers. And now I had to look because toddler murderers was hyphenated, so I had to read the context. I didn't know if it meant like toddlers who were murderers or people murdering toddlers, and it was people murdering toddlers. Shark attack victims, aspirin, can it save your life? Nazis, women who've had mastectomies, a new sport called dwarf tossing, women who married homosexuals, teenage girls who trade sex for crack. Ding, one of you guys said that one. I think it was Olivia's. Aerobic exercise, deformed people, concentration camp survivors, salad bars, has Patrick Swayze become cynical or not? Talking animals. A two-parter that's an exclusive interview with Donald Trump, followed by a report on women who have been tortured, which I thought was fucking hilarious. No?
Commentary before it's time.
Prescient. The best restaurants in the Middle East. People who weigh over 700 pounds. What can we do about them? a boy who fell in love with a box of soap was one of my favorites. Princess Di's beauty tips. Spuds McKenzie was being interviewed, I think, on one.
Yeah.
You guys both get that reference, right? But I'm wondering if there's people who listen to this who are like, what's Spuds McKenzie?
Oh, I know.
Machine.
Younger folks wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah.
A machine that lets people talk to the dead, which was the first topic. So this one got repeated. I wonder if that was intentional or not.
Interesting.
Home abortion kits, human dairies, and I had to look because it's D-A-I-R-I-E-S. That's dairies, right? Not diaries?
Yes.
So what's a human dairy?
That's a woman who sells her milk to men.
Yep.
Wow. It's really disturbing.
Or, to be fair, there is an actual, I mean, if you want natural breast milk and can't produce it, you can purchase it from other women.
All right, moving on. That's all right.
They're called wet nurses. They were very popular amongst like royalty and the rich in like the 1800s.
Gotcha. An interview with a man who set his daughter on fire while she was giving birth. Beautiful teenage lesbians, men who've been raped by women. A two-parter, which was a feature on the lead singer of the rock band Guns N' Roses, Axl Rose, followed by Patty reading letters that Ted Bundy, the mass murderer, had written to his fiance during one of his many trials. People with half their brains removed. An interview with Bigfoot. Patty Winters at one point during an episode was asking a child of 8 or 9, but isn't that just another term for an orgy? Misty's favorite, a Cheerio, sat in a very small chair and was interviewed for close to an hour. Yes. Girls in the fourth grade who trade sex for crack. One of the topics was, does economic success equal happiness? And then I had to follow up with what the reaction was, because they were in Harry's, which is that restaurant that they're always at, or bar or whatever. The answer in Harry's this afternoon is a roar of resounding definitely, followed by much hooting, the guys all cheering together in a friendly way. And then the final topic that was listed is doormen from Nell's. Where are they now?
Have you guys ever seen the Patty Winters show?
No, I thought that was made up.
I did too.
It is made up. Just throwing that out there.
Good one, Livius.
It's a fictional. Here's what's interesting. And the reason I looked that up was, A, I didn't remember that from that time frame. But, you know, they used a lot of real names of people, at least. And I don't know if any of those places are real. You know, the restaurants and stuff they went to all the time. But, like, Bono makes an appearance in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's Bono. And although his interaction with Patrick is maybe imagined by Patrick... You know, it is Bono, the singer of U2, that he's talking to. Yeah. So I was a little surprised that he didn't use a real TV show with, you know, mostly real topics, maybe with a couple of fake ones sprinkled in for fun.
Yeah, because he also mentions Geraldo and Oprah and stuff. So he's mixing
his... Right. That's what I'm saying. That's, yeah.
Maybe the Patty Winters show never existed. It was all in Bateman's head.
No, because other people mentioned it.
Yeah, I know.
So. Maybe all of it was in Patrick Bateman's head.
Oh, right. Oh my God.
So at one point,
it was all a dream.
All right, so we're not going to do spoiler talk. We're just going to talk about it now. If you don't want to know anything more about this book, tune out now and come back in a couple of minutes.
Fair.
Hey, what about he killed Paul Owen, right? Like, we're pretty sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
But then the guy says he actually had lunch with him twice. So, mm-hmm. You know, when there was so that's what I was saying earlier, when it came into play and they were like, no, he's been seen in London. I was like, perfect. Because everybody keeps mistaking people for other people. Mm-hmm. So that totally makes sense and is now really funny. Mm-hmm. But that other guy swears he had lunch with him twice. Did he maybe not kill Paul Owen?
Yeah, but the guy who does that doesn't even refer to Bateman as Bateman.
No, that's true.
So
that's a good point. That's the guy he called and left the message for, right? And he doesn't think so
he's immediately unreliable.
That's true. But I mean, if you want to get into the whole
just do it.
Then he did. Okay. I think there's enough evidence for it to go either way. It is not clear. It's not supposed to be clear. There is no answer.
Oh, Misty is that's Livius's favorite before. There is a fucking answer, and Bret Easton Ellis knows there's a goddamn answer. So,
everything that I've explored in preparation for this points to intentional ambiguity.
Yep, there's. I promise you. Well, I mean, I understand, Livius. You can go track down Bret Easton Ellis for yourself. But in
the phone right now.
I mean, he even did an interview for the anniversary of the book a couple years ago, I think, and said again, it's supposed to be ambiguous. Like, some days he thinks it's real, some days he says no. It's really, he's a literary device. He's not it's not supposed to be a real true person.
Yeah, I understand that because, you know, I read books. My point is, I fail to believe that the creator of any content does not have some buy-in, or if there's a big question left open, that writer has not decided in his mind what that answer is as the creator of that world.
Okay, what did you decide?
Oh, Bateman totally did all that shit. That's the only way this book works for me. And I would imagine it's the only way this book works for a lot of people, because if not, then what are you really reading?
How did he get away with all that stuff? Walking around with blood on his hand, killing a kid in the middle of the zoo?
So I think that most of that is left up to the same way where people just were so into themselves that they didn't pay attention to anything that was going on around them. And I think that, and maybe it's a different society today, but I think that people back then were probably less likely to believe in the worst case scenario. So if you saw somebody with a stain on them, you wouldn't think it was blood. You would think it was chocolate mousse or whatever, because it was easier for you to think that way. Now, again, we're debating something that you guys have said. It was written ambiguously. So, I mean, there is obviously, according to the author, and now I'm putting author in quotation marks because I don't know how I feel about him anymore after hearing that. There's no right answer to this, right? But I'm saying that the book, right, for me, works in that this is something this guy did. I mean, I can tell you other things that don't work. The fact that he was able to identify who made every single piece of clothing for both men and women also doesn't work in reality. Yet we accept it when he's telling us that, right?
There are people that do that.
Yeah, there are people who
right. Those people do exist.
Yeah.
Right. What I'm saying is it's not the 27-year-old Wall Street guy that can identify what skirt you're wearing from across the room. Maybe.
He is, though, and it's not just a Wall Street guy. Do you remember when he runs into Bethany, who he went to Harvard with, and it's like the only time he almost has a like emotional breakdown in public, and it's someone from his past, and she mentions who his dad is? Mm-hmm. He grew up in this world. His dad is a very powerful, very wealthy guy. So he grew up with these clothes and running around with these people, and all those things are what matters, not what we, you know, all the stuff we invest our time and our brains in remembering. That's what he was told to value and remember.
Yeah, that's how I took it, is like at a young age, like he probably realized that you would be considered stupid if you didn't know who was wearing what, like that type of thing. I took a kind of middle road approach to did he or didn't he, actually, and I imagine that to some degree this person kills people, but maybe not as much as he remembers or fantasizes about, if that makes sense. Like the kills might be more mundane or maybe lower in number, but they're out there, and his fantasy world just kind of far out you know, straps his actual like capacity to commit these murders. That's kind of where I am. A little column A, a little column B.
I was going to say you're going with the third option of sometimes maybe.
Yeah.
I do actually really like that, because I think what's unbelievable about it being possible that it happened is some of the crime scenes would be obnoxiously difficult to clean up. I mean, how would he have managed to... You know, if you just think about all those details and all those bodies he had to dispose of, thinking about it practically, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if it's more middle of the road and some of that, yeah, he killed this person or killed these two girls at the same time, but maybe they weren't all strewn across the apartment.
He wasn't trying to make food out of them.
Right. So that's what I love. Like, I'd read through a scene like that and just be like... almost distraught. I mean, at the level of violence. But then he talks about like just having your teeth in a candy dish, and I almost giggle.
Right?
Like it's great. Like it's awesome. Because he mentions it at one point. He talks about making a necklace out of like finger bones, and I'm like, this is wonderful.
Yes. I think it might have been vertebrae.
Or, yeah, whatever. Whatever. Yeah, vertebrae, I mean, but that's like those little things I thought were endearing. But I mean, you know, where he's talking about, you know, just having sex with a decapitated head. Like three times, not just once. He says three goddamn times. It's just a little over the top, even for me.
Wow. Bret Easton Ellis is the one that breaks you of all the stuff that we've talked about over the years.
Oh, it's, I'm telling you, man, I mean, I don't even know what else we've read that I would even consider in the same class of disturbing as this. Like we read, what was the book? The one that was collaborated by like five extreme horror guys.
Yeah, I know. I knew you were going to mention that. It was 65 Stirrup Iron Road.
one, you could just tell the whole point of it was to gross you out.
And it was gratuitous.
Right, yeah. And it didn't have, well, obviously, and it had some supernatural elements and stuff, so it wasn't as grounded in reality as this. But this one, I don't know, it hit a lot closer to home, I guess.
Because you were so identifying with the protagonist. You're like, could this be me?
Listen, I'm going to go out. I'll be back. I got to go return some videotapes.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah. But do you think it was too much?
Yeah, I think that it could have done with a little less.
I mean, would it still stick with you the way it's going to stick with you?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, I have a couple of them highlighted and I just can't bring myself to like read them on the podcast in the event that like, my mother decides to listen or something, but.
or the police.
I just don't know that.
this one, he's looking at him. Yeah.
I am looking at him and this one's actually kind of funny. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. I guess clearly he didn't see these people as human beings when he's conducting these acts, right? But just like the repeated macing, even if you don't get into like carving somebody into pieces, like just repeatedly, you know, macing somebody or them waking up and, you know, both of their eyeballs have been exploded from heat. Like there's just, it's really kind of tough to read and, I don't know how much it adds. I get it. It's the story he wrote, and that's what Patrick Bateman may or may not have been doing. And I don't even like fault the book for it, but I don't think we would have lost anything if we cut that back by 30%.
So I was inspired to go look through the things that I had highlighted, and I realized that the things that I had highlighted weren't necessarily the really gross, disturbing murder parts. But more of the, and Livius, I know Livius made mention of it, and I don't know if Missy, you probably did too, like the almost cheeky way that he talks about stuff in conversation when people aren't paying attention. Like this, it's so bad, and it's bad, but like, just punched my microphone, sorry about that. But the, you can't. Yeah, I know. You can't help but just like smirking at the overall quote. You know, guys, it's not beyond my capacity to drive a lead pipe repeatedly into a girl's vagina. I tell Van Patten and McDermott, then add after a silence, I mistake for shock. Finally, on their parts, an acute perception of my cruelty, but compassionately.
Yeah.
And that stuff is all over the book. And that's like, that's how it wins you over is, just like that, the cheekiness.
Yep.
It's great. His personality when he's like kind of like peeling back the, you know, the mask a little bit is charming. It's great. And Livius, you mentioned it before when you're talking about the cutting the girl's arms off, the bartender.
There's another one from when he's fighting with the Asian dry cleaners about getting blood out of his sheets. And but she's not listening. She keeps blabbering something in the same spastic foreign tongue. I have never firebombed anything, and I start wondering how one goes about it. What materials are involved? Gasoline, matches, or would it be lighter fluid? This is great stuff.
Oh, I love this. You have a poster of Oliver North in your apartment, and you're calling me unstable? That is a great line.
Yeah, I think that... I mean, I guess I'll save it for my wrap up, but I mean, I think he's a very talented writer. But yeah, and a lot of books that I love and respect, it could all do with a little less. It was super repetitive. I mean, I think we got all of this stuff long before, you know, even halfway into the book. So I think that on most things, he could have peeled back a percentage.
What occurred to me was it would be really funny if we told someone who hadn't read the book to read it as if someone was giving you really valuable life advice.
Some of that fashion stuff is pretty legit.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember having
never pick up a Vassar girl,
having an argument with somebody about buttoning the bottom button on a suit jacket. to the point that we asked somebody that worked in a soup place just so I could prove, you know, that this was a thing. And they looked and they said, yeah, you never button the bottom button. And it comes up like twice in this book. So there is some good stuff in there. I do think that Bret Easton Ellis probably did his due diligence in the statements that he makes in this book about everything are probably pretty factual.
I agree.
Yeah. Good stuff. Life advice.
American Psycho. Ready to wrap this up. We're about at the 1 hour marker here.
Hell yeah. Let's wrap it up. I'm not going first.
Allow me to go first then. One of the reasons I stopped reading this book the first time was due to the fact that it's extremely repetitive in descriptions of people's clothing, in his daily routine, in restaurant talk, and all those things that we talked about. And it was off-putting enough for me the first time to not read it. That being said, I don't think I really got into the meat of the story and into Patrick Bateman's head and his nightly or whatever nighttime goings on at the point at which I stopped. So being forced to read it this time and get through it, it improved. And some of the things that came out of it made it more worth the reading, the very repetitive things. As a writer, I think Bret Easton Ellis is pretty brilliant. We talked about some of the funny stuff and even how disturbing some of the funny things were and still added levity and humor to the book. I didn't like reading full chapters about the career of a musician, but it was endearing in the way that he did it. Misty earlier mentioned Polonick, and I almost feel like Polonick got it right. Like he read a Bret Easton Ellis book and said, I want like these repetitive themes in my book, but I really need to not overdo it like Bret Easton Ellis did in American Psycho. So I could see some of that being maybe borrowed a little bit. Overall, as disturbing as it was, I enjoyed it. Probably not something I would recommend to a lot of people. You got to have a strong stomach to read this one and some patience to get through the repetitiveness. But when all is said and done, when I finished it earlier today, I set it down and it was very satisfying. I'm going to give it 4.25 stars.
Misty, you're up.
2.5. Isn't it cheating since I picked this book? Don't we know what I'm going to give this book?
Well, we'd still like to hear your overall thoughts.
Just tell us.
We already talked a little bit about why I like this. I will say, and I didn't say this earlier, I am one of those people who sometimes likes the shock value of a book. I mean, obviously Chuck Palahniuk does that, and that was one of the things that I liked about him. I don't just like, so for like movies, you brought up the Serbian movie. I don't like the torture porn that's popular, like Saw, which doesn't always have as much of a character development. So to me, even though this book is gratuitous and exaggerated, and it definitely shocked me, and still, even though I've read it before several times, there are some I actually didn't fully read the violent stuff again because it was too much for me to read. It doesn't take away my overall feelings for the book, and I felt like the first time I read it especially, there was a point to it. Patrick, to me, is not just, I mean, he's a serial killer, but he's more like a person in crisis, and he's a creation of that time period, that society. And even though it is repetitive, and there's the same stuff going on, and going back again to repeat the gratuitous part, I also think about encountering those vacant people who have nothing. They're just shells, like I mentioned earlier. What would it take to shake them out of that stupor? Like if they're, you know, always on Xanax or Coke or whatever, what would it take to get them out of that and make them a true, like, kind human being? So I also sometimes think that when he was writing this and he comes from that background, was he trying to either shake himself or shake someone that he knew? So I kind of add that into it as well. So to me, there's something really powerful happening in all the gross and misogynistic passages. So for me, I love it because I see something more powerful that's coming from it. I also love broken monsters. I loved Frankenstein, that book when I was growing up. Livius knows I loved Anne Rice's vampires, like those tortured monsters that are more complicated than they seem on the outside. And Patrick doesn't have all that. Don't get me wrong. I don't think he's like this lovable guy inside, but I do think that he's a human that was broken. And so this is what happened because the way he grew up and the world he lives in broke him. So this is what came out of it. And so anyway, that's why it's more powerful to me than just a shock story. And I do give it 5 stars. I do love it still.
There you go. I thought you were going to give it like 3. So
what?
Just because totally, somebody, yeah. Just because somebody review a book doesn't mean Rob and I have picked books. We're fairly certain we're going to be shit books just so we could talk about them. So, I mean, yeah. I didn't think that's where you were coming from with this, but certainly it's a possibility.
It's a possibility. It's within the realm of possibility.
Take us home, Rob.
Taking us home. Because you guys have already talked about so much of the stuff that would bear talking about, I'm just going to kind of focus on an idea or two. And that's like, for me, this book, the overall result of this book is coming from, I'm going to take a step back a little bit, coming from a Midwestern, lower middle class, poor-ish lifestyle, but growing up in that time period, this book really just kind of like gives a big old thumbs up. Like, yeah, you were right, Rob. Everybody's fucking awful. confirming that like the society of Wall Street in the late 80s, when it was all about coke and money and just being awful people. To me, it sounds like this book is like, yeah, that was just a bunch of awful people. And probably those people continue to be awful. They're just older now. But in reality, stepping away from my little bit of humor there, it's just a social commentary. And for me, you could take away one of the characters being a killer and you could insert any other unique characteristic that you wanted to. Patrick Bateman could be a brony and this book would be exactly the same. It would be him bronying it up to get away from the fucking horror that is the society that he was, in. And so people may disagree with me, whatever, but like that's kind of what I took out of it. It was just a big massive social commentary about like what was going on in that place in that time and how everybody was awful, even and especially contrasted to what this person fantasized / actually did. So I thought it was very well written. There was like just so many little charming things that happened throughout the book. Patty Winter's show, returning some videotapes, all those little things that like you just kind of like Livia was saying, there's a lot of repetition, but like it was something to me that created some sort of what's the word I'm looking for? Structure in a story that wasn't a traditional narrative. And so those little bringing you back to the Patty Winter show at the beginning of a chapter kind of reminded me, okay, so this is something that happened later than this, that happened later than this. So it created a structure or a timeline where you didn't necessarily have a very strong one. And they were just fun. There's a lot of really fun things that happened in this book. Yes, there was a lot of disturbing stuff. A lot of stuff that, would seriously put some people off. But overall, I thought the book was really good. So I'm going to give it 4.75 stars.
Yes!
I really debated trying to have the three of us perform the chapter about making reservations for dinner that's later in the book, which was just goddamn brilliant with the call waiting and them not remembering. Yeah. He cancels a reservation they never made. I mean, there's just so they never much made. Good happening in that chapter. That
I actually, Misty, did you get my text about that? Did you ignore my text about that?
Wait, what was it on the group?
It was. I'm going to read it. Give me a little pause. It was 2 a.m.
Was it yesterday?
Yeah, it was overnight. So here's the text I sent. So I'm close to the end of the book. The chapter that consists almost entirely of three-way calling and making and changing reservations at restaurants was that one night at AWP Boston where we couldn't decide where to eat for like 3 hours.
Yes. No, that is exactly what that was.
I was like, I've been there. I know exactly. And like, it was great. It was perfect. It was like, that's why it was one of my favorite parts of the book.
I do.
Livius, do you remember that?
I didn't until you said it, but yes, I do. Cause that kind of stuff just drives me out of my goddamn mind.
Yeah. We lived through it. Probably way less drugs were being consumed when we were living through it than, yeah, but I had to bring that up cause we had, and it literally took 3 hours. For decisions to be made. It was the most excruciating.
So this book nonsense. On Amazon rates 3.9 out of 5 stars with nearly 1,800 customer reviews, which is a lot for a book. I know a lot more people than that have read it, but like I'm very bad about going on and writing reviews for books. I'll do it when an author like specifically asked me to for something that we reviewed here, but other than that, I'm not really interested in doing it. I would like to read one and only because this person's name is the best. The title is Interesting Story, Cumbersome Read, which I'm going to a little bit agree with, as I kind of said in my wrap up. And I'm going to go ahead and read their review. Love the story, but I'm exhausted by the detailed lists of whom is wearing who. It truly provides you with a view of 80s decadence and soulless commerce. Despite having everything, Bateman feels nothing. So this person gets it, right? Their name is Darth Cleavage. Mm-hmm. And that'll be worth reading their Amazon review.
Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing.
Wow.
lots of one-star reviews, and they almost say the same. They all say the same thing. Oddly enough, very few of them say, hey, that part where he's like essentially raping hookers and girlfriends and making them just do terrible things to one another. They all kind of, this one just says, no. That's, yeah. Or they talk about how repetitive it is about fashion and movies and stuff, so.
I mean, while you were talking about the repetition or the descriptions of stuff, that while you're talking about the descriptions of clothes, I did flash to me heavily criticizing Anne Rice for her like elaborate descriptions of like furniture and stuff.
Yes.
And I was like, I have to be a hypocrite here because like at least this time it was interesting. So.
It's the way he does it. Yeah. There's something, because I think when you were talking about how cheeky he is, he does pretty much. So it'll be kind of boring. You're like, oh, here we go again. And then he'll throw in something that makes you laugh in the midst of it, and it makes it worth it.
Yep.
I want to admit something else that I may have been touched on in the podcast previously. I listen to you guys talking about like the moral of the story and stuff, and I just keep thinking to myself, like, I'm so fucking shallow because I like to read books, but really I'm just reading a story. Like, I don't look for that deeper kind of commentary on, I just don't. Like, themes I read it because I want to see what this fucking crazy fucker is going to do next. Not because I care about what might have happened to him as a child or its commentary on Wall Street wealth in the 80s. Like, I just kind of take it for face value. I don't know.
So you would not have read American Brony?
American Brony was, yeah, I mean, at this point, I can only imagine what would happen with someone going crazy in the Brony community, what those violent scenes would look like.
So, did you guys get the link that I sent you to the video?
Yes.
Livius, did you watch it?
I have not had a chance to watch. I finished this book like you two did? Hours before we were doing this podcast. I've had a little bit of a busy weekend.
Oh,
right, so I'll explain it to you and you can watch it later, but Misty, you can kind of react to it. This is something that came out, I want to say within the last 2 years, like a year ago, year and a half, something like that. And from what I understand, it's an actual like denim company that, and it's almost like a commercial for their denim, but it's the recreation of the business card scene plus the axe murder scene. Mm-hmm. And so, but with denim and so, and hipsters. And so, it's like a shot for shot, like line for line recreation, but adapting it so that they're not comparing business cards. They're comparing their denim jeans. The scene where he kills the dude with the axe is, Instead of talking about, was that talking about Huey Lewis?
He was. And this is where, so they are recreating the movie. That those things do happen in the book as well, but he is doing he's doing a very strong impression of Christian Bale and what he did. It is so good. It's so good.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, it was an adaptation of the scenes in the movie more so than what happens in the book. But instead of playing and talking about Huey Lewis, he's talking about Kopi Luwak coffee. Are either of you familiar with this?
No.
Mm-mm. Well, you are now, Misty, because you watched the video.
Yeah.
Do you know, Livius, what the Kopi Luwak
coffee is? I have not heard of this.
So it's in Indonesia and I think the Philippines. There's a breed of large cat called a civet, or a civet, however you want to say it, who eats these coffee beans and poops them out, and something in the process of the digestion makes the coffee like less acidic and more smooth and really easy to drink. And so people will harvest the pooped out coffee beans and roast them and, you know, brew them.
Interesting.
So that's the coffee that shows up in this video. When he's making coffee while he's killing the dude.
The coffee, but, Rob, 'cause I know you've tried this.
It is great. This is really good. I actually have some at my mom's house. We could all have some Kopi Luwak, but it's supposed to be really expensive and obviously weird. But anyway, the video, I think if you search Denham Psycho, D-E-N-H-A-M Psycho, you'll find it on YouTube. It's like 6 or 7 minutes long and it's like,
yeah, it's short.
It's a goofy kind of send up of the original, but it's so well done that it's worth
it. It is. Yeah, no, I was so surprised. I was expecting something more rinky dink when I saw like it was an advertisement kind of thing. And it was very strong. They did excellent work. Everybody, like the acting was good. The way they redid the dialogue to match and like the drama of the jeans versus the business cards. Yeah. It was incredible. And of course, like he really did remind me a lot of Christian Bale with the, when he had on the, that slicker that he wears with the axe.
The apron. Oh, yeah.
It was really good. So Livius, you might want to watch the movie before you, or you'll get more out of it. You'll get
when
more
I saw
out of
the
it.
Video, I was thinking I'd probably want to watch the movie first, but, and I will. I will have some time this week. It's very high. I like the book enough that I want to see the movie, so it's very high on my list of things to do this week.
It's a different take. Obviously, it's a different medium, so they had to do it differently, but it's excellent.
I'm just waiting to see. This is where I was not prepared for this conversation because I'm not going to get my Kindle open fast enough. I'm just interested to see how they portray some of these films that he rents. And then I was going to throw some names out there, but clearly this is taking much longer than I thought it was going to. But you know, the movie that has 5 lesbians and 10 vibrators, you know, I'd like to see how that's portrayed on film. I could watch that.
Do you think that's a detail that they included?
I don't know. The one thing we didn't talk about, sorry, because I am scrolling through my notes. He feeds his girlfriend the urinal cake.
Yes.
He did do that.
And she's like, it's so minty.
Yeah, but you know, and I didn't even think about until he talks about like how him and who knows how many other guys pissed on it first. Like it didn't, when he says he does it, like I'm like, oh yeah, that's pretty terrible. And I was like, oh Jesus, that's so terrible. So terrible.
And that seems like something real. I could totally imagine that happening.
I worked with a guy many years ago who was just kind of, this girl he was dating, he was kind of getting ready to break up with her, and she really wanted to go have, and I don't remember what it was, but they had to go to Indiana for something fairly rare, like a restaurant that's really good at, I don't know, I'll just say crab legs, but you know what I mean? Something, you know, more elaborate that she really wanted to go to. They drove an hour and a half and they're sitting there and he says, I'm just doing this burn the whole time, just listening to her yammer on and on and on. And it a little bit reminds me of this book now that I say it. And he, he gets up, he goes to the washroom, walks out to his car, gets in his car and drives away and leaves her there. So there are people, and I imagine There's no chance of him listening, but Mario, in the event that this ever does make it to you, you could always put chocolate on a urinal cake. That'll work too.
And yeah. Hide it in a Godiva box.
Yeah. So I have a question. Since we're in the whole like American Psycho book / movie / tribute denim video kind of conversation, have either of you seen, and I'm guessing Olivia's is a no, but Misty, mm-hmm. have you seen American Psycho 2, All American Girl?
So I have not, and I do love Mila Kunis.
Olivia, did you know about this?
No.
There's an American. There's a movie called American Psycho 2, All American Girl, that came out 2 years after the American Psycho movie came out, and it has nothing to do, from what I understand, with the original story.
And that's part of why I didn't watch it.
Yeah, but I think they were just kind of. I think Lionsgate put out American Psycho, so they probably just put this out as a way to grab some more money.
That's just. Was it any good?
Nope.
Well, you didn't see it, Rob. Was it any good?
No, I didn't see it, but
the reviews are terrible. I can tell you that.
I'm guessing
3.9 stars.
I'm guessing it's one of those like zero effort money grabs.
I will say, sorry, I'm going to go back to the original, the American Psycho with Christian Bale. Mm-hmm. Livius, you'll be surprised how many like big name stars are in it when they were nobodies.
I
like
really
Reese Witherspoon.
I'm surprised I haven't seen it, just based on my affection, at least for like his earlier movies. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
She plays Celia. I think she's a perfect Celia.
Yeah. Chloe Sevigny's in it.
I know. She's the secretary.
Yeah. She does a great job. Like,
oh, she's amazing.
Jean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jared Leto, William Dafoe.
I forgot about Jared Leto. He's Paul Owen.
If you put two and two together, Batman kills the Joker.
Stop it.
I've seen that before. I didn't realize that's what it was about.
So, yeah. It's got a good cast. It's a well-done movie. I think, Olivia, you'll like the music.
Oh, I'm sure. I can't imagine I wouldn't.
I think you'll love the way that Christian Bale does his character. I think it'll make you like him even more.
Cool.
Pat.
I think that like watching like the restaurant scenes where they're just all prattling on about like shit that only they care about. I'm like, wow, this is so close to how my life is when I get together with my friends.
Oh my gosh. Right.
Yeah. So, Livia, so you can report back to us on how much is this like watching me and Jesse and Harlan sit around and talk about beers.
Or when we try to watch Hannibal in front of him or talk about Hannibal.
You do know I saw Hannibal and that I liked it, right? But I only saw it once.
Well, when you get to the 20th time, you come and sit with us.
Yeah.
You have people to talk to. Yeah.
You wait for me to see it a third time.
When you cry every time you see the last episode of season two, you give me a call.
All right.
I think we're done talking about American Psycho, yes?
Yeah.
Rob, do we have anything else before we talk about what potentially might be the next two episodes?
I think we have enough for a really good episode, considering we kind of just boiled spoiler talk right into the regular talk. But it is worth talking about what's coming up soon. So we have a couple of potential interviews in the near future, but they're not completely solidified yet. So those might be coming soon. Those might be coming after the new year. It is right before the holidays. So we like to lie to ourselves and pretend like we're just going to do the business as usual. But then like when in the moment, like, you know, holidays happen. So
let me put Rob's mind to rest. American Psycho is our last book review for 2017. I know he's been stressing out about me saying, well, next week, I think we're not. Next week will either be an interview or an interlude, which will lead us into one of the most fun episodes of the year.
Misty will be back. Jesse will be back.
In Technicolor or whatever you kids are using on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. On the live videos. Are we calling it Christmas or holiday? Are you being PC?
I was going to say something that wouldn't have sounded really PC. Will we be offending any of the cast if we call it Christmas? Is my only concern.
No.
Not me.
No.
All right. And I don't think we'll be offending Jess either. It is our Christmas extravaganza spectacular or whatever.
Yeah. I'm very excited about that. Very excited.
I did send Rob a picture to show him that I was getting into the holiday spirit, and he did not comment at all.
How do you comment about that?
Do you have on a Santa hat?
So I'm going to send you the picture, Misty.
Yeah, send her the picture, because he technically does not have on a Santa hat, or, you know, but he has on an outfit in a way.
Oh, it's going to take me a while to find this, apparently.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. I took a lot of pictures this weekend.
Just lost my heart on.
Well, it's okay, Misty. We'll see if we can get it worked back up for you with this photo.
We'll see if you bounce right back.
Oh! That is listeners. Viagra for women.
Incredible. That is incredible. You're wearing that on. Just go ahead and take that display and bring it to the camera.
So for our listeners, Livius, the only way I can describe it is like there's like those like painted on things with the head cut out. You stick your head through the hole and then you're that thing. He's that as like a Santa's elf.
One of the vendor reps that I know very well came in and said, "Hey man, they sent these to us. My boss said I have to send pictures. Do you mind doing it?" I was like, "No, fucking I'll do it." And he didn't think I was going to. There are other ones, but I thought that one, the look on my face was just perfect. I have a feeling that'll wind up somewhere in a post for the holiday episode, which is why I gave it to Rob before I could change my mind.
That's going places. That's going places. All right, That's going to wrap it up.
Oh, and then we're going to do a year in review episode. I don't feel like we did anything this year to talk about in review. So who knows? That could turn into a political conversation. It could turn into
talking about our personal lives.
We could talk about our personal lives. We could do a lot of things. So really, no more books till 2018. Yeah. And then 2018, we might have some books. You never know.
Maybe. Maybe we'll have books in 2018. Misty, thank you so much for joining us again. Thanks for being a very reliable host who brought us a very entertaining book.
Oh, thank you. No, it was absolutely wonderful.
Awesome.
Misty, of Patreon books that we've had to read, yours is my favorite.
Yes, that was pretty much the goal. That is all I had in mind.
Just winning the approval of Olivia.
Beat Jesse at the approval.
Wow.
You want us to review a book and join us in reviewing a book, go to patreon.com/book. You can see all the perks on the side. Listen, we don't just give this shit away. So it's the highest perk that we have available. But for only as little as $1 a month, you can show your support for this podcast and get access to spoiler talk if and when we ever review a book again.
I'm so looking forward to our holiday Christmas extravaganza spectacular. This is like one of my favorite things of the year. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Join us next episode for something. And until next time, I'm Rob Olson.
And I'm Livius Nedden. Keep reading.